Welcome to the infamous podcast, Bitch, I'm Not Well. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Brandy.
And we're invested on taking you down to Crazy Town, where we talk about crazy bitches who are truly unwell.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back. It's been a while.
It's been a hot minute.
I've missed you so much.
Me even more.
Okay, so let's get started, because I've seen online that a lot of people don't like when people banter before, which after I read it, I don't either. I'll always fast forward through it, but whatever.
Same. Anyway.
So I'm doing something a little different this week, because the majority of our case is going to focus on the victim of the crime.
Okay.
Because she was a badass, and she was unfortunately let down by the system that was supposed to be in place to protect her.
As per usual.
Yeah. It's really bad with this one. Like,
oh, no.
You're going to see. It comes to a point where you're going to be like, what the?
Beep.
Yes. So, Denise Amber Lee was born on August 6th, 1986 in Englewood, Florida. She was the daughter of Sergeant Rick Goff and Sue Goff. Amber's dad, Rick, was an officer with the Sheriff's Department in Charlotte County, Florida. Denise was described as a happy, fun woman that knew what she wanted and was not afraid to go after her dreams.
Good for her.
Yeah. Denise met her future husband, Nathan Lee, when they were both seniors in high school.
Oh.
Denise considered herself a bookworm. She was shy and didn't go out of her way for attention. She enjoyed reading and she really liked math. Bless her. While Nathan...
Oh, sorry about Ellie.
Sorry, Ellie. I guess Ellie doesn't like math. Nathan was a football player and very athletic. He was considered a jock. He was outgoing and the life of the party. You know how the old saying goes, opposites attract?
Yes.
Well, that was what happened with Denise and Nathan. And Denise is the one that approached Nathan.
Get out of town.
And asked him out.
Well, the girl knew. She like knew. You said, not afraid to go after
not
her
afraid.
Dreams.
She is not.
All right.
And from this point on, they were in love and their relationship moved quickly from just starting out to becoming very serious and committed.
High school sweethearts.
They were as sweet.
Cute.
They began dating a few weeks before Valentine's Day. So for their first Valentine's Day, Nathan purchased a silver heart-shaped ring.
Dang, Nathan.
I know.
Jumping all in.
It cost him $40, but yeah. Denise cherished this ring and would wear it every day for the rest of her life.
Well, that's a lot for a high school student.
That is a lot for a high school student. And like even after they were married, she had her engagement ring and wedding ring, but that heart-shaped ring was always on her finger.
So sweet.
Denise and Nathan were married shortly after graduating, and her parents loved Nathan and were very supportive of their choices and their relationship. Soon after they were married, two boys would join their family, and they became a family of four.
Oh.
Around this time, Denise and Nathan purchased their first home together. The home was nice and in a decent area, but it was in an undeveloped area, and they only had one neighbor.
That's not a bad thing.
It's not, but Denise's dad as a cop did not like this.
Right.
He wasn't 100% on board. He was like, you know, if anything happens, what if nobody's home at the other house? You have no witnesses, you know, it's just you.
Mm-hmm.
But Denise and Nathan loved the house and they were ready to get out on their own. So they bought it and I saw some pictures of it. It was a nice house, especially.
You can walk outside and pee in the yard. Nobody knows.
Exactly. I mean, I was looking at my house. I'm like, we hardly have any neighbors, and I love it.
I love it. I had neighbors before.
Yeah, you did. You could like reach out your window and touch them. You'd slap them.
Maybe. Well, I wanted to slap them, but it was, yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's illegal sometimes.
Sometimes.
So Nathan was the breadwinner of the family, and he worked up to three jobs at a time to make sure. Yeah, because he and Denise both wanted Denise to be a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. And she loved spending the day with the boys.
That's great.
Yeah. And they were 2 years old, Noah, and 6-month-old, Adam. And they loved their mom and dad, and she loved being a mom. So life was good for Nathan
and
Denise.
Sounds like life was great.
Yes.
Like the whole...
Everything.
White picket fence dream.
Yes,
know?
Everything was working in their favor.
Okay.
Since Nathan worked so much, him and Denise would talk frequently on the phone throughout the day while he was at work on his lunch break, or I don't think he smoked, but, you know, smoke break, whatever.
Smoke break, yeah.
And at 11:09 a.m. on January 17th, 2008, Nathan called Denise while on his lunch break, and they talked about normal daily things like the weather and the things the boys had done that day. Denise mentioned that the house was really stuffy, and Nathan told her to open the windows to let in a breeze and fresh air. But Denise had already done that. Now, they live in Florida, so it was probably hot and sticky.
So the fresh air was sticky
even
and stuffy.
In January, the winters down here are not like the winters up north. They're still hot, sticky, damp.
Yeah.
But she did have the windows open, you know, just for a little something. When Denise got off the phone with Nathan, she took her two boys outside to the patio and she began to cut their hair.
She even cut their hair?
She cut their hair herself.
I love this mom.
I know. She's great. She really is. She's like the perfect stay-at-home mom. Like,
right.
She does everything.
She probably crafts, too.
She probably did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
She probably did a lot of stuff that I would not have patience for.
Patience or time.
Yeah, or time. Yeah, that's true. So at the same time Denise is outside cutting her kids' hair, their only other occupied house on the street, the owner's 16-year-old niece was staying with them. And she had come down from a couple states away because her boyfriend lived in the area. So she was spending some time at her aunt and uncle's house so she could hang out with her boyfriend.
Okay.
And that day, she was waiting for her boyfriend to come and pick her up, so she kept keeping an eye on the road and the driveway so she could meet him whenever he pulled up. And as she was watching out the window, she saw a green Chevy Camaro pass in front of the home multiple times. And then she saw it parked in Denise and Nathan's driveway.
Okay.
The 16-year-old never heard anything that would alarm her and assumed it was a friend visiting, but she did feel like something was off, so she kind of made a mental note of it, but she didn't see or hear anything. So it's like, oh, maybe I'm just like overreacting.
Well, maybe because there's no houses out there and this Camaro kept passing back and forth and then pulled into their driveway.
Yeah. And she had been there for, I'm sure she was probably there for like winter break. So
a winter break. Yeah.
It was probably like, I've never seen this car come through here. Denise normally doesn't have anybody come through in the daytime. Like, I'm sure there was quite a few things with only one other house there that was odd. At 3 p.m., Nathan was on his way home from work and tried calling Denise. And she didn't answer, which was odd, because she loved to talk to Nathan on his way home. He had a 25-minute drive home and called Denise 8 more times, each time with no answer. This started to worry Nathan, because it was not like Denise to miss his call and not call back, especially 9 times in 25 minutes. When he pulled into the driveway and noticed that all of the windows on the house were closed, he thought it was odd, but he knew Denise had said she opened them so they could have a breeze, but maybe it was too much. She closed it, whatever. So he went in the house and he found Denise's phone and keys on a chair. Then he found his sons sleeping in the same crib, which is something that Denise would never have done.
Right. Okay.
He checked the windows after that and realized that they were all closed, but none of them were latched. And that made him believe that Denise was not the one who closed the windows. Nathan immediately called 911 and reported his wife as being abducted. After he called 911, he called Denise's father, Rick, who was a police detective. And Rick reached out to the Northport Police Department because, you know, he's a Charlotte County, so this is a different county. And they would be the ones running the investigation. And he explained that it's his daughter that was missing and that her abduction needed to be given immediate attention. Rick also reached out to his chief and coworkers at the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, pleading with them to do all they could to help find his daughter.
I guess.
Yeah, that's got to be scary. Within half an hour, Rick had police dogs and a helicopter canvassing the area. Officers went to the neighbor's home to see if they had seen or heard anything strange. The niece was still at the house, and she relayed the information about the green Camaro. She said that it had been up and down the street multiple times and parked in Denise's driveway. She said the Camaro was in the driveway at around 2:30 p.m., and when she looked out a few minutes later, the car was gone and it never came back. So at 6:35 p.m., 4 hours later, they put a BOLO out, or a be on the lookout, for a green Chevy Camaro.
Okay.
That frustrates me because she's missing, and you know this car was the last one there. Why wouldn't you put something out and say, hey, you need to look out for this car just in case?
Yeah.
But whatever, I'm not a police officer.
Not today.
Not today, anyway.
Maybe tomorrow.
Probably. At 6:14 p.m., another call was made to 911, and the caller was Denise.
Pardon?
Yep. She stole or had gotten a hold of her abductor's phone without his knowledge.
Oh, my God.
And was having a conversation with him about where they were and where they were headed with the operator on the phone. And he didn't know that she had his phone or that she had called 911.
What?
Yes.
Balls on this girl.
I know. And the call was about 6 to 7 minutes long, so she kept him going for a while.
Mm-hmm.
While she was talking with him, mm-hmm. she included her name, the street that she lived on, mm-hmm. the make and color of her abductor's car. She kept pleading with her abductor to let her go. I think at one point somebody said there was like, she said please 17 times in this 6 to 7 minute call.
Oh my God.
She told him about her two sons that she loved very much and her Ugh. Husband. That she just wanted to see her family again. And in the 911 call, Denise repeatedly begged to be released. She maintained the call for 6 to 7 minutes before her abductor realized his phone was missing.
Mm-mm.
He found the phone and hung up immediately.
Mm. That's sickening.
Yeah.
For the 911 operator to all of a sudden have it, like, disconnect?
Yeah.
That's sickening.
Well, I have it. We're about to go over recording because...
Oh, okay.
We're going to go into how the emergency service and protection system in general failed her.
Oh, gosh.
Get ready to be really freaking pissed off.
Okay.
The next... the call from her I have here, the mm-hmm. sound at the beginning is a little hard to understand.
Okay.
But after a few seconds, it is easier to understand. And then I'm going to tell you about a few other calls that they had.
Oh, God.
down and I hear things in the air too.
Turn down the radio because can't hear you.
That was the 911, another 911 operator?
Yeah.
Asking her to turn down his radio?
Yep. Can you please turn down his radio because I cannot hear you? While she's screaming, I don't have your phone. Please bring me home. Please help me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It, like, I guess what really, really pisses me off is... around this exact same time, there was, it wasn't in Florida. I want to say it was in like Connecticut or something. A 911 dispatcher got a phone call and it said, yeah, I'd like to order a large pepperoni pizza. And the guy's like, this is 911. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just one large pepperoni pizza. Ma'am, do you know that this is 911? Yes, that's why I called you. Are you in a safe environment? No extra cheese on the pizza. Mm-hmm. Are you being held hostage against your will? Yeah, that should be fine. And it goes on like that. And it's like, he was smart enough to know that after the second time she asked for a pizza, she's not really calling for a pizza.
Yeah.
But I guess this 911 operator didn't understand that she couldn't say, hey, I don't know who you are. You're kidnapping me and about to murder me. Can you please shut up because I'm on the phone?
Do you know if she was like in the back seat or if she was in the trunk or she
was in the front passenger seat, but she was on the floor.
Okay.
So.
Because she could hear the 911 operator because she was answering some of the questions.
Yes. So okay. I think how she had it was since she was on the floor.
Yeah.
She could kind of hear what the woman was saying.
Okay.
Which it's not 100% because nobody was ever able to ask her how exactly she did it. But right. Later you find out that she was on the floor in the front passenger seat. So I'm assuming that somehow she had it down there and she was scrunched up. I mean, she's a 21-year-old woman in the front of a Camaro.
By the way, this guy looks like Gru.
Yeah, he does.
He looks like Gru.
He does. He's like a piece of shit.
Well, I hope he's burning in hell.
God, me
or
too.
Will.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that you felt the same way about that call as I did.
That was gut-wrenching. Yeah. Really, it was.
I mean, like, how lucky do you have to get your captor's phone and to mm-hmm. call 911? Mm-hmm. And then it still didn't work. When police heard the call, Denise's father verified that the caller was his daughter, and officers immediately tried to trace the phone to its owner, and they determined that the owner of the phone was Michael King.
Michael King?
Yep.
Okay.
Denise's family had no idea who this person was, but they hoped that since they were able to find out who had the phone or who owned the phone, that they could do tracking. But the phone was a cheap burner phone, and they were unable to trace the location of the call.
Of course. You can't trace a burner?
I thought you'd be able to triangulate the location of the burner phone.
They have an IP address, don't they?
That's what I would think. Easier than you would be able to find who purchased the burner phone.
Yeah.
But in all the articles I read, they found out who purchased it, but not where it was. I mean, it was.
I guess that's why people use burners, maybe, because they can't be tracked.
They really can't be tracked. From all of my knowledge on cell phones from The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
If you buy a phone at the dollar store and use cash, then they have no idea who purchased it. But I don't really think that's true.
I'm going to vote that all that needs to be changed.
I think so.
Because of just instances like this.
From all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Michael was a 36-year-old unemployed loser. A man.
Oh, okay.
No, he was a loser.
He wasn't a man.
He was not a man. He was a little bitch.
He was a bitch.
And that's why this episode is not even named after this little bitch.
Good. Don't give him any credit.
Nope.
We don't even know his name.
Nope. We're going to call him Fart.
So Fart.
So Fart lived in Northport.
I know. Yes.
Which was only a few miles away from Denise and Nathan's home. Michael was recently divorced, and he had a 12-year-old son with his ex-wife. Due to not having a job, Michael's home was in the process of being foreclosed on. Poor Michael.
His poor wife and son.
Yeah, thank God he didn't have his kid at the time, and I hope he never gets to see his kid again.
Me too.
9 minutes after Denise's call to 911, a different 911 operator received a call from a girl named Sabrina.
Sabrina
stated that Michael had shown up at her dad's house to borrow a shovel and gas can.
Okay.
While Michael was at the house, a woman jumped out of his car and started screaming for help.
No.
Yes.
So he pulls over, leaving his hostage in a car to borrow a shovel and a gas can.
Yes.
This dude was such a loser, he couldn't pre-plan.
Yeah, couldn't pre-plan. He didn't even own a shovel or a gas can because they had actually already been to his house. Michael hurriedly ran back to the car and put the woman back inside. Sabrina gave the address of her father's home. And when Sabrina made this call to 911, Denise was only 4 miles from the home.
Oh, my God.
The reason Sabrina didn't help her is because Sabrina was not there.
Wait, how does she know then?
Sabrina's father called and told her what happened and asked her to call 911 because he had a criminal record. And didn't want to tell anybody anything.
So this was a friend of Michael's?
This is his cousin.
His cousin.
His cousin, yes. Okay. And I do go into more detail because cousin finally grows some balls and does something.
Yeah, cuz.
It's about damn time, cuz. At approximately 6:30 p.m., 911 dispatchers received another call. Mm-mm. So we're on call number 3 about the same woman.
Okay.
This time it's from a woman named Jane. When Jane placed the call, she was just inside the Charlotte County line crossing from Sarasota County. Mm-hmm. Jane told the dispatcher that she was heading down U.S. 41 along Florida's west coast. She came to a stoplight and suddenly heard what she thought sounded like a child screaming in terror. The screaming was coming from the car beside her at the stoplight. Jane looked over to see what was going on, and at that moment, Michael looked over and made eye contact with her. The child screams that Jane was hearing was actually Denise screaming for her life.
Oh, God.
Jane had no way of knowing what the screaming was, but as her and Michael were staring each other down at the light, mm-hmm. a hand reached up and started banging on the passenger window.
Oh, my God.
Jane immediately dialed 911. She believed she was seeing a child abduction. Mm-hmm. She began to explain to the dispatcher exactly where she was and what she saw. She assumed she had been connected to the Sarasota County Police Station, but her call was actually sent to Charlotte County Police Station.
But they still didn't know about it.
The Charlotte County is the one that her father worked for.
He had already contacted them.
So they should have known about this. Jane did her best to follow the car and attempted to get his license plate. But while she was speaking to the dispatcher, she did her best to follow the car and attempted to get his license plate while she was still speaking to the dispatcher. She said later that she noticed the dispatcher seemed to be slow to respond and didn't really acknowledge that how big of an emergency this call was. Jane was not able to continue following Michael's car, however, because he realized what she was doing and slowed down to get behind her. Jane slowed her car down to 45 miles per hour, hoping that the driver would get aggravated and pass her up again so she could follow.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, he did not.
Well, that was so brave of her, and a lot of people would not do that.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are, Jane, but...
Yeah, like, Jane, you're a hero in this story.
You are.
While still on the phone with 911, Jane asked if she should continue to follow the car, but she could not get an answer from the dispatcher about if she should keep following him.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael's car abruptly took an exit, and Jane lost sight of him. The dispatcher then told Jane, "We have your number, and if we need you, we will give you a call back."
You fuckers.
Yeah. Now, we know that Jane owns this number. Why couldn't Jane's location be traced exactly?
Exactly.
Jane can tell you what number exit he just got off
on. Yes.
Like, this was, I mean...
Even if it didn't have anything to do with Denise,
there was still the
potential of a child abduction or another abduction going on.
Yeah. There's somebody screaming, "Help me," and banging on a window in a car.
Don't worry about it.
Man, it's fine. Look, everything will be fine. In 10 minutes, if I could just get her off the phone.
We'll see if the next dispatcher takes over.
Yeah.
Call back in 10.
Jane said she could hear the dispatcher relaying information to other people around her, but no one ever contacted Jane again.
Bitch.
And you're going to find out why.
No.
At 6:42 p.m., police arrived at Michael King's home.
Mm-hmm.
They broke down the door and entered the house, but the house was empty. They searched the property, and during the search, they found a room that could only be described as a torture room.
Oh, my God.
It was obvious to everyone that it had been recently used.
Oh, my God.
Police found duct tape that had long strands of hair.
This is 6:42 the same day?
The same day.
Okay, so he had already been to his house?
He abducted her around 2:30.
Okay.
And he only lived a few minutes away. He went home with her, did God knows what with her. He left. He went to his cousin's house to get a shovel and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He gets caught on the interstate. And, I mean, basically at the same time...
So was it after he had tortured her that she made the call?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Poor baby.
Yeah, because he had already done whatever and thrown her back in the car to go get his shovel and gas can. Police found duct tape that had long strands of hair attached that were later confirmed to be Denise's hair.
Mm-mm.
Minutes later, 911 received another call.
Mm.
This time it was Cousin Harold.
Okay.
Sabrina's father.
Okay, cuz.
Harold had a criminal history and did not want to get involved. To try and remain anonymous, Harold made the call from a payphone and refused to give his name.
That's okay.
The information he provided to the dispatcher was vague, except for the description of the green car, which was a Chevy Camaro, with a black cover on the front known as a bra.
Okay.
It was determined that Michael had been at Harold's house around 6 p.m. and borrowed a flashlight, gas can, and shovel.
Oh.
Michael's reason for needing this was that his lawnmower had gotten stuck in the mud in his yard and he needed these things to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
While Michael was talking to Harold, Denise was able to get out of the car and begin screaming for Harold to call 911.
Mm-hmm.
When the cops heard this, they were stunned because by this time, it had been almost an hour since Michael was at Harold's home. Harold said he asked Michael what was going on And he said, nothing, don't worry about it, after forcing Denise into the back seat of his car.
Oh, God.
Michael quickly got in the driver's seat and sped away. Harold knew his cousin had a history of bad relationships, so he initially chalked it up to a minor domestic dispute. He was still concerned enough about the situation that he decided to call his daughter Sabrina and told her what happened, and she reacted by immediately calling 911.
Good for her.
The situation Harold had witnessed with Michael was weighing heavy on his mind, and he made the decision to go by his cousin's home to verify the lawnmower story. Mm-mm. When Harold arrived at the house, there was no one home. Plus, there was, of course, no lawnmower stuck in the front yard.
Plus, she was running out of the car screaming,
help me, call 911.
Help me, call 911.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it took him, you know, an hour to think, huh, this story just doesn't seem right. I don't know why, but something's not right here.
Gotta know right from wrong.
Yeah. Harold realized he had been lied to, and at that point, he decided to call 911 himself, though Harold tried to remain anonymous on the 911 call. Police soon pieced together that he was both Sabrina's father and Michael's cousin.
Which is still okay.
Yeah, like, we don't care.
Yeah, who cares? Thank you for doing a good deed.
Yeah, why did it take you so long? As soon as police figured out Harold's identity and home address, they went over to the house and questioned him about what had happened with Michael and the woman that he had in his car.
I bet he had his shit and pants on.
Oh, probably. It was at this time that Harold told the police all that had transpired. The fact that Harold witnessed Michael and Denise together and had the best opportunity out of anyone to save her that day tears up Denise's family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She had multiple chances for people to step in and help her, and they didn't.
Ugh, that's sickening.
At 9:26 p.m., a state trooper pulled over a vehicle matching Michael King's 1995 green Camaro with the black bra. Mm-hmm. Michael King was behind the wheel. He had finally been found, but he was alone in the car.
Yep. Well, 9:15 is...
3 to 4 hours after everybody had been calling 911 all day.
7 hours after abduction.
Mm-hmm. Michael was pulled over about 4 miles away from the location where Jane, the driver who had called 911 on the road, had seen him. The trooper made Michael get out of the car. When Michael got out, the trooper saw that Michael was soaking wet from the waist down. He was all wet. All he had on him was a cell phone, but the battery had been removed, and the trooper found a muddy shovel in Michael's car. Now, right before Michael got off the exit when Jane was trying to follow him, there was a sheriff's officer about a half a mile down the road past that looking for Michael's vehicle. Mm-mm. And if the dispatcher would have told anybody, the cop was literally right there. He could have gotten on and attempted to follow. He was like a half a mile away.
During that phone call.
During that phone call with Jane.
With Jane saying, hey, should I follow this guy?
Yep. We're on this road. He just took this exit. There's somebody in the car screaming.
My God.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like anything bad that can happen, happened.
Ugh. That's sickening.
At 9:30 p.m., Denise's father, Rick, received a call with the information that Michael King had been found. Mm-hmm. Rick hoped that meant that his daughter was now safe. But unfortunately, he was wrong. Though Michael King was finally located, he was not about to tell police what he had done.
Of course not.
Instead,
he's a bitch.
Oh, yeah, no. And he is really great at storytelling because he claimed that he was also a victim and had been abducted alongside Denise by a stranger.
Really?
Yeah. Who he had, out of the goodness of his heart, Michael had offered this stranger a ride.
Was it his cousin?
He wasn't even smart enough to say that it was his cousin.
Okay.
He didn't even have any. It was a stranger that abducted him. Michael, nobody wants you. Yeah, I was, you know, Denise was abducted, and I was a good Samaritan and stopped to
just
help this woman
this dude
screaming.
A ride, and then he made me pull over, and because I'm not a man, I didn't stop him from abducting this woman and with her two kids in the house, and I helped him close the windows inside.
Yeah, I even waited in the car.
Just so the kids wouldn't get a cold from the
from the
hot humidity.
I was nice enough to open the door for him to get in the car.
I'm a champion.
You are welcome.
Yeah.
Look, you ain't getting no award of the year. Michael was taken to the police station where he was held for questioning. Hours after his arrest, Michael was allowed a visit from his cousin, Harold. During their visit, Michael gave his cousin his version of what happened that day. He told his cousin the same story he had told the police. Michael said that he had attempted to call 911 while being held captive. He also claimed that he had no idea where the kidnapper had taken Denise because the kidnapper had let him go first and continued to drive off with Denise still in the car.
Again, what a man.
Yeah, but...
What a mighty good man.
He's saying that the kidnapper let Michael go first.
Yeah.
But Michael was in his car.
Yeah.
When they found him.
So yeah, because he probably found Michael and dropped his car off to him and said, thanks for letting me borrow your car.
Yeah, I'm back now. I'm going to walk off. Mm-hmm. You're good. You can call 911 in 15 seconds. Just give me a little head start, baby.
What a kind kidnapper.
Oh, he really is. He's very thoughtful. I wonder what his name is, like Mr. Imaginary, Mr. Goodman. Michael, you're full of shit and nobody believes you.
Mr. Goodman.
Mr. Goodman. I like that one. Michael also tried to take the credit for Denise being able to call 911.
Oh, he slipped her his phone, did he?
He did. During their conversation, Harold tried multiple times to convince Michael to take a lie detector test to prove his innocence. But Michael showed no interest. He stated that he would not be doing anything until he had a lawyer present. While being interrogated, Michael mentioned a location that he believed Denise had been taken to.
He had telepathy, too.
He did. This dude is like, he is a winner on everything. I'm surprised he hasn't won the Powerball yet, to be honest. However, when police searched the area, they found nothing. Unconvinced by the story Michael gave to Harold, the police charged him with kidnapping. By this time, 2 days had passed and there was no sign of Denise.
Oh, God.
Many volunteers and police officers worked together to search for Denise. Her body was found about a half mile from the location where the state trooper had picked up Michael.
Wow.
A canine unit discovered a freshly dug hole within a marshy field. In the hole, they found the naked remains of Denise Amber Lee.
Poor baby.
She had been shot in the head. After the discovery of Denise's body, her family expressed their gratitude and pain over their loss. With Denise recovered, police could now focus on putting together a profile on Michael King and try to figure out why he had targeted Denise. They found out that Michael had moved from Michigan to Florida in 2002 after experiencing a painful divorce. He was currently an unemployed plumber who stopped going to work about 3 months earlier.
Just stopped going to work. Okay.
And a lot of other really important things going on, like nothing. Michael had no criminal history other than a few complaints made by neighbors who had believed he had been pulling pranks around the neighborhood.
So weird.
Yeah. And it was pranks like throwing fish in their pool because they thought that they had put up a pool to show them that they had more money than him.
Okay.
Slashing tires of a new car because he thought they bought the car to make his car look like a piece of shit.
Okay, so he was going through a mental crisis
he
of
was
some
not,
sort.
Yeah, he was not there.
Bitch was not well.
During their investigation, police were able to get in contact with a woman named Patty, who was the owner of a beauty salon in Venice, Florida.
Okay.
Michael had been a regular customer at her salon. Patty described him as a quiet, modest customer, except for one disturbing visit where Michael had brought a girl with him who he had said was only 15 years old.
Excuse me?
Yeah. So Patty assumed it was his daughter or niece or something until they started making out at the front desk.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
What? But he bothered to tell her that she was 15?
Yeah, oh yeah. He made a point to let her know, yeah, she's 15. It's fine.
Everything is fine.
Yeah. Don't worry. She's not my daughter. It's okay if I make out with her.
So this was a real thing. Like, she actually saw him doing
this. She saw him. He told her that the girl was 15 when she was doing his hair. And as he was checking out, they started making out. Like,
Who does that either?
Yeah.
Who does that anyway?
Yeah. In a normal relationship with adults that are consenting. God. Who makes out at the desk while you're trying to check out from getting your hair done? It's just, it's weird.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was like trying to prove a point.
I
might be a loser, but I can get a 15-year-old to kiss me in public. Yeah. Something's off with him. More disturbing complaints came in about Michael after that.
Mm-hmm.
Other witnesses claim that Michael had exposed himself to a woman while at work.
Of course. Escalation.
Another accused him of sexual assault. However, none of these were ever reported to police.
Of course not.
Yeah. So he had probably done a lot of really bad shit throughout his life, but nobody turned him in.
You know, this is why if you ever feel like you're being a Karen or a Nancy or whatever you want to call it, if somebody really does something that significantly disturbs you, you probably need to make a report.
Yeah.
If nothing ever comes of it, then that's great.
It's fine.
Or if it's a misunderstanding, that's great.
But if you don't do anything, that person gets murdered or raped or whatever, it's like, how are you going to feel then?
Right.
Just tell somebody. Say something. It was also discovered that Michael had spent 2 hours at a local gun range just a little while before he was seen pulling into Denise's driveway. After a few days, Jane, the woman who had believed she was witnessing a child abduction, called the Northport Police Department after recognizing Michael's picture on the news. Jane told them that that was the person that she had called about whenever she thought she had seen a child abduction, but now realized it was Michael holding Denise down in the car. She wanted to know if they needed her to provide any further information. No one at the Northport Police Department knew anything about the call that she had made.
What?
As it had gone to Charlotte County.
Yeah, I remember. Okay.
More so, no one at the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, where the call had been routed, knew anything about the call either. Now, both of these county sheriff's offices were working on this case.
Together.
You can't tell me that there's this many people that have been kidnapped at the exact same time on the exact same day that there's multiple calls coming in about people being kidnapped.
My God.
Like, this just pisses me off so much. The dispatchers had never sent out the notification of the phone call.
Really?
Yep. For the next 2 days, Jane kept calling the Northport Police Department until investigators finally managed to find records of her 911 call. It took them 2 days. How many 911 calls do you get a day?
They probably get a lot. Honestly, they probably
But it's just like, it took you 2 days to find that? Make the bitches that were supposed to be entering this in the system sit there all day and listen to these calls.
Well, you know the date and the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be a pretty set thing. There can't be that many dispatchers there. Sit them all down in an office and be like, okay, who called and said they saw a person banging on a window screaming for help? I know you didn't get that many that day. And if you did, then we have a real big problem.
I hope they had to go through training again for this.
We'll get to that.
Sorry.
You're not going to like that either. During an internal investigation regarding Jane's 911 call, it was discovered that the operator who took the call realized that the call could be related to Denise's kidnapping.
Light bulb.
Yeah. However, the operator never entered the information about the call into their computer system.
What?
Yeah. All she did was shout out to the other dispatchers across the aisle.
Oh, my God.
The dispatchers who had heard her never sent out the tip. They claimed the chaos of that night was overwhelming and they forgot.
They forgot.
Yeah, that's a big I forgot.
I forgot to punch in. Somebody was being kidnapped.
And the one that everybody's looking for that was kidnapped.
And we got a tip.
And we got a tip about somebody being kidnapped.
Very rare. Okay.
Yeah. To make this even worse, multiple deputies were stationed near Michael's location at the time of the 911 call from Jane.
Oh, Brandy.
In a sworn statement, one deputy said that he parked alongside Toledo Blade Boulevard at 6:35 p.m. This means Michael could have driven right past him with Denise still screaming for her life.
Oh, my God.
This information weighs heavily on the friends and family who lost Denise.
I guess.
The sheriff of Charlotte County, John Davenport, refused to admit that his department was to blame for the missed opportunity to save Denise while she was driving down the Toledo Blade Boulevard.
For real, John.
For real, John. Get your shit together.
John Davenport.
Instead, said the chaos caused by the emotional stress was just too much. And this was the reason why Jane's call was neglected. I'm sorry, but you were in exactly. You were in an emotionally stressful job.
My God!
If you can't handle it, then you need to find another job.
That's aggravating.
That's not an excuse.
That's not a proper response.
No, not at all. Denise's father, Rick, however, disagrees. He stated that Denise was beating on the window so hard and screaming, trying to get help, which is a smart thing. By this time, Denise was probably aware that help wasn't coming. Rick then stated, "We blew it." And I say we because I'm part of that. Sheriff Davenport did make four of the call center workers take remedial training.
Oh, good.
And he suspended two dispatchers who took Jane's call for a few days, but the punishment meant little to nothing to Denise's husband.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, that's kind of too little too late. Denise's family believes that she did everything in her power to save her life that day, while the Charlotte County Police Station failed miserably. As if there wasn't enough evidence to prove this fact already, upon further investigating the green Camaro, police found clues that were believed to have been planted by Denise.
Oh, no.
This evidence was found in the backseat of the Camaro. Police found strands of hair torn out by the roots, matching She ripped out her hair. And they also found a heart-shaped ring that she had been given by Nathan on their first Valentine's Day.
She separated with her ring just so they would know.
That is the only time anybody can remember.
Like, you know you're going to die.
So she took her ring off and she shoved it in the seat in the back so they would know it was hers.
And he did it.
He did it.
Yeah. Oh, God, Denise, I'm so sorry.
More evidence would stack up against Michael, who was continuing to play innocent. A lab report showed a match between his DNA and that found on Denise's body. Not only was Michael now being accused of murder, but he was also being accused of sexual assault.
Pig.
6 days after Denise's abduction, a massive funeral was held in her honor. The entire town came together to pay their respects to Denise and her family. Questions about Denise getting abducted in broad daylight by a complete stranger continue to haunt her family. Although the evidence stacked up against Michael is immense, he pled not guilty during his trial. The family's questions remain unanswered with all that has transpired throughout the desperate search for Denise and the many mistakes that were made. Nathan was not about to chalk up Denise's murder as an unavoidable death. He truly believed that more could have been done and should have been done by the police to save her life.
I believe that, too.
I do, too. In April of 2008, Nathan filed an intent to sue Charlotte County for their failure to save his wife due to their carelessness. His focus wasn't on the money that he would receive from the lawsuit, but to ensure that Charlotte County was held accountable for its mistakes. Rick, Denise's father, took the stand to ensure mistakes like this never happen within the Florida 911 system again. Named after Denise, Rick pushed for the passage of a state law that would standardize training for call center workers. It was called the Denise Amber Lee Act. It passed unanimously on April 24th, 2008. Unfortunately, this act only provides optional training for 911 operators. It does not mandate training and certification. To this day, Denise's family continue to push for the new law that would make the training and certification mandatory for all 911 workers. The investigation into Denise's murder found that Michael had aggressively sexually assaulted Denise multiple times in his home.
Oh my God.
He did so again right before shooting her in the head and burying her naked body in the ground.
Oh my God.
Medical examiners found several defensive wounds on her body and bruising on her wrist from where she was bound. Denise had been shot point blank in the head, but medical examiners discovered that she did not die immediately. She had suffered before she died.
Oh.
Michael shot Denise above her right eyebrow, which caused her eye to explode.
Holy.
Yeah.
Blood, oh my God,
had also entered her lungs, which signified that she was still breathing after being shot. Yeah, like this cannot get any worse than it does. It's just like this poor woman was non-stop assaulted,
fighting for her life,
murdered, and let down. And yes, she did everything in her power to stop him, and nothing worked.
You know what she was probably thinking about? Her two boys.
Yes. But I'm sure that, God, please just don't let him go back and get my kids. I hope Nathan can watch my babies. Like, yeah.
I mean, I know that she was thinking of her husband, too, but your children, I bet she was thinking about those two boys that whole time.
Yeah, because they're thinking that's why she put them in the same crib, so they could, like, take care of each other until their dad got home, so they wouldn't be alone.
Mm.
After the trial, Michael King was found guilty of sexually assaulting and kidnapping Denise. On August 28th, 2009, it took almost 2 years for the family of Denise to finally see her murderer condemned for what he had done.
Horrible.
The punishment for the assault was 30 years.
30 years?
His sentence for kidnapping was life. His punishment for her murder was death. It was believed that Michael's death sentence would be carried out swiftly.
Mm-hmm.
God, I hope it was painful. But he continues to sit in the Union Correctional Institution in Rayford, Florida. As of now, there is no indication whether he will actually be served his death sentence. The Charlotte County Sheriff's Department failed to help save the life of Denise Amber Lee. Now the justice system may fail to provide Denise and her family with the justice they deserve.
There's no date set.
Nope, no date set. Now, her family and her husband, they did form the Denise Amber Lee Foundation that helps provide support to families of missing and murdered, and to also train first responders and stuff to where they all answer the same way. And Nathan used some of the money that he got from the Charlotte County lawsuit to go towards this foundation, and then other money he used for like his kids' college funds one day. And they're still way too young to go to college.
Oh my
God. Yeah. So that's,
I cannot imagine.
That's,
I cannot,
her story.
Imagine.
And it's a really sad story. And
it's
her life was
sad.
So short. She was 21 at her house, cutting her kids' hair. Like, how more wholesome can you get?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I guess none of them are ever really good.
No,
but this one was just really,
this was really gut-wrenching.
Really bad.
Did they know why he chose her? Did they? Nobody ever found, just
random? It was
random,
just random.
I'm just driving on a street.
Yeah.
I'm going to find somebody.
They had somebody come by at one point to the office and say that they saw Michael behind Denise in line at the post office, and he had followed her home from there. But Denise had never gone to the post office. So, especially not that day. So they really think that since he lived a few miles from there, he was just driving around and he saw her outside on the porch with her kids.
And with kids?
Yeah.
Like, thank God it wasn't the 16-year-old, okay?
Yeah.
But then you see a woman with two boys and that's your, let's opt in.
Yeah, let's go after her. Like, I hate him so much.
Well, I hope he's put to death very soon.
Me too. Cheers to that.
Appreciate you listening to yet another depressing story that hopefully educated you on always
stay alert,
vigilant.
Yes,
always be vigilant, whether in a parking lot. You know, now you hear about Walmart parking lots and Target parking lots and mall parking lots. You just never know. All right. Well, this was a bad one.
Sorry, everyone.
And, we really, really do appreciate you listening in. And, I mean, maybe the more thumbs up, we can retire our full-time jobs.
Yeah, and we can do this more often for y'all.
Do this full-time, right?
Yes. You can give us some 5-star ratings.
Yes.
You can write a little review for us. We've had 9 ratings so far, and 3 people wrote reviews on us.
I am so excited.
I know. I was really excited, too.
We're still just babies in this game.
Yeah.
But we love what we do.
We do.
And we really would like to present it every Friday, and we're sorry for the Fridays that we haven't, but we do apologize, but we're coming at you hard.
Yeah. We'll be back.
And you're going to like it.
You're really going to like it.
All right. Bye.
Bye. We appreciate you listening to our podcast. If you liked it, please give us a good rating. You can listen on your favorite podcast platform with new releases every Friday. Just search for Bitch, I'm Not Well. Send us suggestions for an episode at b.tchimnotwell@gmail.com because Gmail won't let us use bitch. Or visit our website at www.bitchimnotwell.com for more podcasts and our fabulous merchandise.
We'll see you next week on another podcast about another crazy bitch who is truly unwell.